I forgot you drive a truck, don't you, Austin?
I do.
I should have added. We should do truck talk on here.
Dodge Ram.
See how long we keep the streak. Oh gosh, no, we can't be doing that.
Yep.
Well, we could talk about your upcoming transmission replacement. All right, welcome back to the Catch Pit Show, everyone. This is your one-year host, Mike Moran, and we're joined tonight by Neil Pichard. Hi there, Neil.
Mike, how are you?
Doing good. And third co-host tonight. Yep, it's another interview tonight. An interview or co-hosting. I don't know what you want to call it, but we've got Austin Jackson with us. Hey there, Austin.
Hey, how's it going?
I have a feeling some people may not even actually know your full name, but Austin Jackson, also known as traditionalpocketknives.com. Thanks for joining.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Mike, I got to jump in first and say, you know, I know you live in Arizona. I know it's nice and warm in Arizona, but today in Minnesota, today it was 55 degrees. January 31st. I mean, normally it's like 30 below. You know, where I live here, people that walk outside, there's people that just freeze instantly. But today, 50, there's people running around in shorts, in sandals, flip-flops. This is weird, Mike. I'm just saying that this is not normal for Minnesota.
Now, come on. The Midwest gets a few nice days every January, every year.
In the 50s?
Oh, yeah. When I lived in Cincinnati, we'd have days in the 50s and 60s. Yeah, but
Cincinnati is about a block north of, that's just a block north of Florida.
It's true. It's a whole nother world. Like Cincinnati's the southwest corner of Ohio for those geographically challenged or listening from international locations. But my in-laws live in Cleveland, which is on the north side of the state. On the east and where the Lake Erie, it kind of turns up the shoreline there. And I'll be mowing my grass. And it's just 4-hour drive. I'll be mowing my grass in March, and my father-in-law would be snow blowing his driveway at the same time. So it's funny how just a few hours.
Mm-hmm. Austin, how are you looking temperature wise?
Today it was about 45 and cloudy. So that's how it's been the last month. So Yeah.
Welcome to the Midwest.
Yes, pretty much.
That's why I'm here in Arizona, where it was 81 degrees today. Shorts and t-shirt, like always.
Must be nice.
So, Mike, I want to hear what's going on shop-wise, but I also want to know, now that you're, you know, living out in the desert, have you got any new handle shields? Are you going to have a scorpion, a coyote, a jackrabbit? Is there something that you're...
Oh, I like that scorpion idea. Mm-hmm. I did have a shield made up by my friend Chris Crawford, or a pattern for my pantograph. It's a saguaro cactus. So I have cut that out, and that's going to go on a newer version of a knife here one of these days when I get around to it. So yeah, I do have that. And I changed my logo. That's kind of an interpretation of a saguaro cactus. And I might do that as a shield. It's like three lines that kind of looks like a cactus. I've been a little nervous to do it as a shield because I'm going to have to pin each one of those. And I'm going to have to use a really tiny pin because, you know, my religion calls for pin shields. So this ain't case pocket knives where they fall out in your washing machine. So
that's right.
I might have to cut that out.
Or I hate to say it, but Boker's had a horrible problem over the years with their shields falling out of their handles. So I agree, Mike. I mean,
yeah, it turns out when you Elmer's glue them in.
Yeah. No, they got to be pinned.
They look good on Instagram, but they don't hold up very good. So
aside from a new shield, what have you got in the way of new knives, Mike?
All right. Still working on my straight jack, although... I did go just a little overboard last week, and I put carbon fiber on it, and finally, I absolutely loved it. Well, I sure won't touch on it, but you know, the boys down there at Jack Wolf have been doing that fat carbon for quite a while now, and I kind of like the look, and there's a lot of carbon fibers that I like. There's the fat carbon, there's carbocorts, there's all kinds of stuff out there that's pretty cool. I've always shied away. I've never really liked the traditional like layered carbon fiber, but this stuff with color in it is looking cool. It grinds pretty well. It drills fairly well. The one thing I was super nervous about was, would I be able to peen pins against it? I searched the internet and I called a bunch of knife makers, and a couple of guys have done it. I've seen like one or two examples of it out there, but it doesn't seem like they did a bunch of it. So usually when a knife maker does a material on a handle and he doesn't do it again, that's because he hated it. So I was a little, I waded into it with trepidation, but it worked out pretty well. I was pretty gentle with it, and I really like it. I'm sure I'll have cancer in 5 years from now, but for the next 5 years, I plan on using more carbon fiber.
There you go.
You said color, Mike. What color did you use?
This particular one, let me see if I have a... I don't think my camera's going to pick that up very good, but it is... this particular one, it's got copper in it. It's a copper color.
Is it a fat carbon, dark matter copper?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
That's beautiful. Guys love that.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I like it. So it looks like... kind of looks like a rag micarta or some of the hemp I've used in the past.
Does it buff out similar to micarta?
Yeah. Yeah, it buffs up pretty nice. It's dirty, real dirty stuff. But
I've heard that carbon fiber does crack, not easily, but can crack. When you were cutting, machining, drilling, did you have any little cracks that you saw?
No. I had one little chip from where I was drilling it, but I drill it with the covers being a little fatter than the finished thickness. So I wasn't concerned about it, but I did see it chip a little bit when I drilled it. I wasn't being super careful. I was just running the drill bit right through it without thinking, but I'd say you have to pay attention when you're working with it, but yeah, I'll be using more of it. It's spendy though, but yeah.
It definitely is expensive, but the quality is there, and it's definitely worth the effort to put in to make it look nice.
Yeah, I think it's eye appealing. There's a lot it's not super flashy and it's subtle, but it's got some glimmer to it. That's what's going on, Neil.
Very cool, Mike.
Austin, what's going on in your shop? You print any labels today?
About 25, I think I do that. I post Holy that on God. The Instagram stories just about every day, but...
I love watching your videos of the label printer go.
Oh, good.
Just spitting out labels. Oh, good. Shipping labels.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, every day you see it. You know, we're getting orders in and shipping out the same day. If not, we ship out the next day, and it's just busy, and it's good to see where the business has grown to, and there's definitely more growth to be had, so.
Well, let me ask you some questions. Can we get into some nitty-gritty?
Yes.
I know people listen to this Let's one go. Hear some nitty gritty. How fast does that printer go? How many labels can you print in a minute?
A minute, I'd say probably around 75 labels.
Wow. Yeah. And what are you using for your store, traditionalpocketknives.com, for those not paying attention, traditionalpocketknives.com. Are you using like Squarespace or Shopify, or what's your setup?
So traditionalpocketknives.com, which is my website, it's all run through Shopify.
Okay. So you've got like some sort of method to like select all your orders and print all at once type of deal in there?
Yep. So I've also had, I downloaded ShipStation too. So ShipStation and Shopify, they can sync together. So let's say, you get 20 orders on Shopify. Well, you can go over to ShipStation, log in there, update to where they'll sync, and then from there you can fulfill through ShipStation. And once you fulfill those orders, then ShipStation will tell Shopify, what the tracking numbers are, and then Shopify will then send out emails to the customers regarding tracking info. So it's quite a setup, but it works really well.
Yeah, that's sweet when it works, right?
Absolutely, and it's a pain in the rear when it doesn't. So,
well, all right. Since we're talking about the online commerce piece, when I first met you, I used to be able to go on to your website and just take a look at the GEC knives there. Maybe a couple queens.
Mm-hmm.
My, how times have changed in the last few years.
Just a little bit. Just a tad bit.
Now, how are you, okay, when a GEC drop comes,
mm-hmm.
So GEC, I'm guessing they notify their dealers, and because GEC only sells through dealers, right?
Yes, they have dealers, and then they have distributors, and so a distributor maybe gets like 5 to 10 pieces, where a dealer will get, a full batch, if that makes any sense. Yeah.
Whatever that ends up being.
Yep.
All right, so you get your batch.
Mm-hmm.
And do you open up those knives? Because I see them on Instagram all the yes. time.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what brand of knives I get in. I will always inspect them just because you never know how many pieces that brand is pushing out. And ultimately, it's going to be my responsibility if that bad knife gets in that customer's hands. And that's just not what I want. So each knife that comes in through the store, myself or my employee, Brian, will inspect.
So you literally open up the tube or box or whatever brand mm-hmm. I'm talking about, and you open the knife up, check it out, do a visual inspection every knife?
Yep. Yep. Check wow. out the walk and talk, see if there's any pin cracks, gapping between the liners, handle material, the whole thing. So
now, let me ask you this question, because this is something I struggle with occasionally is when I'm putting a knife together, I might open and close that thing a bunch mm-hmm. after I beat it together. And you start to lose, and Neil and I have talked about this in the past, you start to lose a sense for how strong the pull is after a while.
Absolutely.
Yep. Do you ever find yourself like, man, I set that out, that was a little stronger than I thought it was?
Or, yes.
So you just kind of get used to it over time?
Pretty much, yeah.
Do you ever get that?
Yeah, after inspecting, you're on your 200th knife, it's just like,
yeah,
all right, let's, speed this process up if we can. So.
Yeah. Yeah. It is funny how you can lose that sense of,
oh yes,
how strong the pull is over time. Well, that's interesting. That is some work to go through those knives.
It is. Obviously I enjoy it. Any chance to hold a GC yeah. knife or a Jack Wolf or Rosecraft is hot right now. Really. And so is Cooper Cutlery, the new owners of Chatton Morgan. Any chance to hold a traditional made USA, especially a USA made knife, it's just, I love it. And even though, like I said, you get to your 200th knife and it gets a little tiring, but you still have to admire the piece of artwork that, you are holding in your hands that, if it's coming from GC, how many times has, it been touched by a human? 1,000 probably.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Quite a few.
Mm-hmm.
Probably by Bill himself.
Yeah. Honestly, probably so.
Yeah. All right, guys. There's some inside baseball. Austin's opening those knives.
That's right. Yeah.
Decreasing the value of them, putting his grubby fingerprints all over them.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I touch them. I don't even wipe them down. I throw them back in the tube, No wrapping paper, nothing. So. Yeah.
Shoot.
Yeah. To answer your question. So when GC, makes like this run of 15 Barlows, they're probably wrapping up now. They will email you throughout the week of shipments that are headed your way. So it gives you a pretty good idea of like what's going to come down and what you can kind of expect to, receive and how you want to release it. And people that are familiar with my website, obviously I wait till I get a whole bunch of those GCs in until I hold a release, because let's say a batch of 25 knives come in, I don't want 500 to 750, if not 1,000 visitors on my site, logging on just to get 25 knives. So I will wait until I have 100, 150, 200, just depends on, how much of that run they make. And that way it's a little bit more fair for people that are trying to log on. And I mean, as everybody's aware, there is no right way to release these GCs. I can just try to do my best. And I feel by doing that and by announcing a date and time release, at least it gives someone a chance to log on to the website, to get ready, and to hopefully be able to purchase a GC. But, no matter how perfect that release goes, you will always receive phone calls and emails just, you know, telling you that you did it wrong. You know, I waited for an hour and this is a scam, and you know, who yeah. knows what kind of.
That's tough because you got such a product that's so desirable that the, mm-hmm. that, yeah, it gets yeah. tough. All right. So you, on your website, because you do it a little bit differently than other dealers, you will have a product listing for each individual knife. Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. And so if I'm after a particular knife, let's say GC releases a nice little Barlow or something, mm-hmm. I can go and camp out on there. What time do you usually release those?
I used to do, I mean, really Monday, really Sunday through Saturday at 8 p.m. I mean, that was my thing from 2020 to 2022. These last maybe 2-3 years, Fridays or Thursdays at 2 p.m. is my thing. And the 2 p.m., the switch from 8 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern time, sorry. So the switch from 8 p.m. to 2 p.m. Eastern time, it probably gets me close to 500 more visitors, which I'm guessing, especially during the summer, because 8 p.m., you know, people are busy with kids and sports and whatever, where wintertime, yeah. you know, they're stuck inside. So I feel like 2 p.m., it just, everybody's up, and it allows the West Coast people to get on. It allows the UK people to get on, so.
Okay, so I can go sit on that site and hit refresh, and then mm-hmm. I see the knife there. And then I click the buy button or whatever the button says.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard rumors that you might stand a better chance depending on your payment method. Is there any truth behind that or not?
Like yes.
Your payment might process faster if you use like Apple Pay versus a credit card or something Correct. Like that.
Yeah. So if you're, it's 2 p.m., you see that knife's available, you click it, you add it to cart, you check out. If you are literally typing in your account information, your credit card, your zip code, like you're going to lose out. So if you can download Shop Pay, which is Shopify's app for processing, you know, payments and orders and whatever. If you can download Shop Pay, Apple Pay, if you have an iPhone, Android Pay, if you have a Android, PayPal Express, really any payment app that autofills, and that's the key word, where it autofills and allows you to pretty much just autofill within 5 seconds and then scroll down, hit checkout now. That's how you do it.
Boom. That's how you do it. So if you got your bifocals on and you got your credit card in one hand, and you're typing it, that's looking right. for the number 7 on the mm-hmm. keyboard, you're done.
I mean, let's just be honest. You know, like older gentlemen, you know, I do feel for them. Hey,
Neil's got feelings. don't single him out.
Hey, you said it. You said it. But, I mean, they don't understand the payment apps and all that. And a lot of these gentlemen, they will have their grandkids with them at release time. And the grandkids awesome. Will have their you know, so you're
bringing families together.
That's yeah. right, exactly. Yeah. So, but I mean, I get it. It's confusing. It's even confusing for me. So, I get the whole. Yeah,
it's a lot.
You know, everybody says it's bots. If you're referring mm-hmm. to bots as Shop Pay or Apple Pay, then I guess you're correct. But as far as legit online bots, I don't think that's a thing. I know it's not, because on Shopify, it allows you to see what kind of payment app they used to purchase that knife. And a lot of them are, if it's not Shop Pay, it's Apple Pay or it's PayPal Express. So,
yeah, I mean, I know what it's like. I see that when I post a knife. You know, I post through my email list, and, you know, some people get the email faster than others or what have yeah. you. And,
yep.
and I can see like, it's frustrating because there's only one knife
yeah.
or in your mm-hmm. case, there's only X number of knives. And I can see 10 people in there in real time trying to buy the thing, but only one guy's going to get it.
Yeah.
So I know it's frustrating, but hey, I guess that's for those that enjoy it, that's the thrill of the chase.
Yeah. And that's honestly a thing. You know, these guys will email me on Instagram or message me on Instagram saying, you know, hey, I missed out on the knife, but I really do appreciate the rush. And, you know, it got me excited for the next yeah. GC release. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the way you do it, Austin. I think, there's no, like you said, there's no perfect way to sell a knife, and there's always going to be a segment of audience that is disadvantaged due to whatever reason, technology or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I know you probably put a lot of work into posting all those photos and those individual product pages. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it absolutely is. When you have to take photos for product pages, marketing photos for marketing graphics, make videos for YouTube, make videos for Instagram. I mean, these GCs, I could honestly just send out one email and have them gone in a minute. But, you know, I put in all that work. Honestly, I put in all that work because I love pocket knives. But
yeah, honestly, you could just give them to one guy, right? I bet you got 100 guys out there that just buy them all every time.
That's right. Yeah. But, you know, I love it. I love the whole process. And I think people can really see that I do put in the effort to make it as fair as possible. And I mean, you log onto the website, you can see the effort I put into the website, my story about my grandfather, Clarence Reisner, and myself, and, you know, me attending knife shows with him. And, you know, I've been around knives since I was born. So obviously I have a strong passion for pocket knives. And I think if you visit the website, then you can clearly see that.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I hope.
So, all right. So we've talked a little bit about how you sell knives right now, but now your grandpa, he didn't have it quite so easy, did he? In some ways he did, but some
he
ways
did not. He did not. No, no.
So, all right, let's go back. We don't usually do like formal interviews on this show because that's just not how we roll. But let's go back in time to when you were just a young little buck there. your grandpa actually get into knives? Do you know? Was he always into them or was there a certain defining moment?
So around the early 70s, he was a chemistry teacher. Then he went to the high school to be the principal. Hated being a principal and then went back to being a chemistry teacher. Anyways, during that time period, early 1970s, mom said that he would always want a hobby. So he tried whittling, he tried collecting cigars, and then, you know, here came the pocket knives. And from there, he just started collecting just a whole bunch of, especially like old German knives. Case was big then at the time. And really where he got his foot in the door was the German Eye brand, Fighting Rooster, the Indian Heads, what else was there? Bulldogs. And he just started collecting them and going to knife shows. And I would say that is officially where the C. Reisner Cutlery took off and officially established in 1974. So that's where he took it.
Wow. When a lot of those brands are no longer around.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
How did that transition then from him being a collector to being a dealer? Did he find himself that he had duplicates, had a lot of extra knives? Did he just love the knife so much? He just thought, man, being a collector just isn't enough. I got to get into this full steam.
Yeah. So I think he just started collecting and collecting. And then he met Mr. Burns. Mr. Burns was the owner of Buck Creek at that time. And that's Mr. Burns is who officially introduced Grandpa to Solingen, Germany, the people working at the German Eye brand factory. And he just started collecting and collecting. And I think he just got so many knives that when he started attending these trade shows and knife shows, he just set up a table and people would refer to Clarence or Mr. Burns as the one of the sole importers for German Eye. And that's where it officially just took off and he just started selling at trade shows and knife shows.
Very cool. And when did you start going along with him to the shows?
So I was born in 1992. And before I was even born, he had a whole knife collection, which I still have to this day. He had a whole knife collection already put together for me. And that obviously that collection means the absolute world to me. But yeah, we would attend shows in Louisville. Cincinnati was a big show. Lexington, Pigeon Forge, St. Louis was another big show. Yeah. So like around that, you know, Kentucky, Tennessee, Georgia line. I mean, I remember every summer and probably one time in the spring and one time in the fall that I would, you know, attend knife shows with Grandpa and, you know, just really good memories I had with him there.
Even beyond the knives, it must have been fun to watch your grandpa wheel and deal with all these other old timers and, you know, and other enthusiasts and buyers. I mean, to me, half the fun of the knives is the personalities that you're dealing with and sharing with. That must have been fun for you just to watch that whole play out.
Absolutely. I remember sitting in a chair, and Grandpa just had built so many friendships over the years with all of these different knife people. And knife shows were, it was kind of like the internet at that time. You know, you go to a knife show to meet all of your knife friends that, you know, you've been on phone calls with the whole year, and you can finally meet them in person. So sitting at Grandpa's, he would have probably 7 or 8 tables that he would set up at these knife shows, and just seeing him interact with all of his friends, seeing guys come up to him, hug him, talk about knives. It was funny because Grandpa was always so busy talking to all of his friends that my father would always have to actually run the tables, or as I grew up, you know, I would help run the tables too. It's just a very good memory of just seeing Grandpa interact with all of his friends and seeing the smiles that, you know, knife shows would bring to people's faces. And just a very good memory that, you know, I will never forget.
I want to know about what your grandpa used to keep under those tables. Did he have some good stuff under his tables he hold back for some friends as they come by?
Every now and then, so around early 2000s is kind of when I started picking up on actually like how he talks to people, how he interacts with people, how he sells the knives and whatever. And some of the knives underneath the table, I mean, they would be knives from like 1940 to 1950 that have never been opened, touched. You know, they've been sealed away in this case that he had. He had some high end Chatton Morgan and Queen was big at that time, early 2000s, also made in Titusville, Pennsylvania by Bill Howard himself, the now owner of GC, which, you know, everybody probably knows. But yeah, Grandpa had some pretty high quality knives, and every now and then he would have, you know, that one friend or two friends that would come up, and you could just tell like, these friends are for those high quality knives. You know, they're definitely bringing the money, and they've been waiting all year to finally get their hands on this knife. So just, it's funny.
That's always fun to see the good stuff come out.
Uh-huh, that's great.
Now, you mentioned, you know, under the table. When I was younger, you know, I'd say 4, 5, 6, that was definitely my take a nap, you know, halfway through the show spot. So just a funny memory. He would always bring like this, in the military, we call them ISO mats, but like a sleeping mat. And it's just funny. It's a good memory of me taking a nap when I was, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old underneath the knife show table. So
you've been around. We need that for the internet. We need a under the table type of setup for the internet. I don't know how we do that.
Yeah, right.
You need that, Austin.
I know.
So Austin, what first brand of knives did you start selling, and then what did you evolve into? What do you sell now? I hate to say it, but I'm pretty behind the ball when it comes to modern knife sales. I collect mostly antique stuff, old knives. So I've never even bought a knife off of a modern site. I've had a few buddies of mine buy a few knives for me, but I haven't bought one. So I'm really kind of uninformed that I should be with the stuff that you and other purveyors do online. So I'd love to hear more about that in the process.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely understand. So I graduated high school in 2010, went to the military. When I got back from the military, that is kind of when I officially created a website for Grandpa. And at that time, Grandpa had 3 websites. He had ChattonMorgan.com, CReisnerCutlery.com, and ClarenceReisner.com. Chatton Morgan obviously had Chatton Morgan knives. Clarence Reisner had Queen knives. Or I'm sorry, CReisnerCutlery.com had Queen knives. And ClarenceReisner.com had Indian head knives, maybe some older German knives. So I mainly kept Chatton Morgan up to date, and that was like the main website. And he and I had discussed for several years before he officially or finally passed in 2016 that I would take those 3 websites and combine them into one after, you know, he passed, and I would take over the company, and which is obviously now traditionalpocketknives.com. But to go back and answer your question, I you know, like I started helping grandpa with ShettandMorgan.com. So I really started to get invested with like ShettandMorgan.com, or I'm sorry, ShettandMorgan knives, Queen Cutlery knives. I would talk to, you know, people at Queen. I would get together some orders for, you know, 3, 4, or 5 months down the road. And so that's kind of how I really got into the e-commerce side of things, was with ShettandMorgan knives. Then, like I said, Grandpa passed June of 2016. That's when I officially started taking it over. Around July, I had contacted Great Eastern, had been in contact with Bill. I said, you know, this is what happened. You know, Grandpa passed away in 2016. I would absolutely love to start selling Great Eastern knives. Yeah, this is my website. And I don't think Bill even questioned it. He's like, yep, you're good to go. You're a dealer. Grandpa and Bill had worked together when Bill was at Queen ShettandMorgan. So Grandpa had already had that, you know, knife rapport or relationship with Bill Howard. Because I remember Grandpa having SFOs made and having discussions with Bill about SFOs being made. So obviously when I called him, when I called Bill Howard, he of course took me in. I started dealing with GECs, and from there, I still had leftover ShettandMorgans that Grandpa had collected and stored in the basement. I had a whole bunch of German iBrand knives that, again, Grandpa had collected and had stored in the basement. So to answer your question, yeah, ShettandMorgans, Queens, and German iBrands from 2016, 2017 is pretty much what I sold. Now, 2018 and 2019, I would say I had officially sold out of pretty much all my ShettandMorgans, all my Queen Cutlery knives, and definitely all my iBrands. The iBrands moved quick, but come 2018, 2019, I was mainly dealing with GEC, and then I started taking on like modern knife companies such as Finch Knife Company out in Kansas City, and then from there, it moved to around 2020, 2021 was Esnix, which you guys are familiar with Evan Nicolaitis. I mean, such a good dude. So I'm obviously very proud to sell his knives. And a good buddy of mine that I've met over the years, Ben Belkin with Jack Wolf Knives, which Jack Wolf Knives has tied in or has introduced modern traditional pocket knives to people that have or had no idea what a slip joint is. And so now they're interested in these Jack Wolf knives, and they're now looking at GC knives. They're looking at Cooper Cutlery knives, which Cooper Cutlery is now owned ShettandMorgan. So it's so neat to see as my business has expanded and grown, the connection that these modern traditional pocket knives are reaching out and making with people that had no idea what a slip joint is. And now that's all they want. They want a modern slip joint. They want a leather slip to carry with their, you know, modern slip joint
knife purse.
And it's just really neat.
So do you sell any custom knives? You mentioned a couple names, but do you, like, if people ever trade knives into you, or do you deal with knives that maybe are an older knife, but they're still a mitt knife? It's something that you came across or that you rep for someone. And I guess more what I'm talking about is in the custom field, some of the custom makers.
Yeah, I've never really have sold custom knives. But honestly, I've never really reached out to custom knife makers and offered to sell. I feel like custom knife makers, they either have their own market, they know how to sell their own knives. So I feel like, you know, why should I interrupt their, you know, community or their way of selling their knives when ultimately they would have to sell it to me, then I would have to, you know, upcharge, you know what, 30, 40% and sell it again. So I've never really messed around with custom knives. More so, I've just been kind of introducing myself to new brands such as, like I mentioned, Finch Knife Company, Ben Belkin with Jack Wolf Knives. Another one is Rosecraft, and another one would be Devo Knives, which if anybody's familiar with YouTube and follows the knife community on YouTube, Lefty EDC, Kevin is the co-owner of Devo Knives along with Colin, and they're both two good dudes.
Have you ever traded in a knife? Like, say someone bought a GEC from you, and obviously it was still perfect. It wasn't, you know, still had the wrapper, the original tube, everything. Do you ever do a trade-in where a guy says, boy, I want to have this knife, but I don't have the money for it, or I bought a knife, a couple knives from you, and I just as soon move them on. Do you ever do a trade-in?
I never really have messed with trades, knife swaps, and it's pretty rare that somebody will email me or call me saying, you know, I have this 2021 GC, you know, 15. Can I trade it in for the new 2024? Yeah, let's say GC 47.
Turn around and go on eBay and sell it for four times as much.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's a good point. I mean, they can just go on eBay, list it for 40, 50, 100, you know, like times four,
yeah,
whatever they paid for it, and sell it that way too. So now I will have people that will call me saying, hey, you know, I have this old collection, I'm no longer into pocket knives. Or I'll have, you know, wives call me and saying, hey, my husband just passed away. These are the knives that, you know, he had. Are you interested in them? And in that case, if it's, you know, a lady that has called me or emailed me and they have no idea what the knives are or how much they should even sell them for, usually I offer to say, hey, send me at least a good picture of the knives, or send me the list of the knives that he had. And from there, I can give you an accurate price of what they should sell for. But just a heads up, you know, I'm a dealer. I'm going to want a little bit less than what, you know, I'm going to tell you and probably what they can sell for. So if you have the capability of selling them yourselves by going on eBay, that's how you can get the most bang for the buck.
Good, honest, and fair answer.
You know, one thing in the future you could think about doing is not only doing it that way, which is the right way in my mind, but then calling your friend Mike Moran and saying, hey, look, I just found 40 knives that are stamped Rogers or Wolstenholme.
There you go.
Give me a heads up. Or maybe Neil. Neil might appreciate a heads up.
I'd prefer the call first. Yeah, if you would offer.
Yeah, you would.
No problem calling Mike as long as you call me first.
You call me, I will sell them to Neil for double, and everybody will still be happy.
There you go.
So, Austin, tell me some of the hottest or the most popular knives you sold over the last several years. There's got to be a couple that stand out that guys are just screaming for them, or you've had, you know, 100 requests for a knife. I'm just curious which models they might have been.
Yeah. So obviously any GC, right? I mean, let's just be honest. It can be a Farm and Field Tool brand, which is like their work line of GCs. Anything GC, I mean, GC could make the worst knife in the world. And I mean, honestly, it's just going to be really good quality. Yeah. And people, or let's say that GC could make the ugliest knife in the world. And I mean, everybody's just going to still want to have it just because GC's quality. GC's top of the game right now. Lately, I've been carrying Cooper Cutlery. I met Gilbert Cooper over the last few years. They're actually down here, just south of me, and they're in Winchester, Ohio. So I've actually gone down to their shop a few times, met them in person, really good people, and they're learning how to make, you know, really good quality pocket knives. And it's been a process for them, and they're finally getting to the point where these knives are looking pretty good. They're not quite GC level yet, but they're really good. And I think one day they'll be able to match GC. But for right now, they're still putting out some really good quality knives, and they're to the point where they're just like GECs, that if I have a Cooper Cutlery release, I mean, they will sell out within minutes.
Oh, is that
just right? Like GC will.
That's great.
And
did they got a lot of that equipment out of there, didn't they? Did they get some of that equipment out of Queen? Or
yes, they did. Yes. So funny story is, I don't think he would mind me sharing it, but he had to make several semi-loads back and forth between Winchester and Titusville. And he said it was an absolute, you know, pain in the butt for those first, I think, 1 or 2 or 3 months. But yeah, so he did finally get all of that equipment loaded up on the semi and brought back down here to Winchester, Ohio. And his setup is actually really nice. He has them all laid out, all cleaned up, and he has them numbered. So I think he's definitely on the right track. And you can tell, I mean, a Cooper Cutlery knife in, or 2 years ago compared to a Cooper Cutlery knife now is almost a completely different knife. And like I mentioned, they're starting to look like GEC knives. Yeah. But the funny story is regarding the whole closure of Queen Cutlery, they closed their doors. And then it took several years later for the town of Titusville to finally put that building up for auction, and the machines that were left over, put them up for auctions, and random Queen parts, random Chet Morgan knife parts, put all that stuff up for auction. They finally had that auction. And then it was a year later that the trademarks became available, and the trademarks is exactly what I wanted.
You're talking about Queen Cutlery. You're talking about Queen. You're talking about Chet and Morgan.
Am I missing that? So I think there was eight altogether. Queen, Q. So you had, you know, Queen was one. Then just the letter Q was one.
Yeah.
Queen City was one. Chet and Morgan, File and Wire, Dollar Knife Co. Obviously, I wanted to get my hands on all of them, right? So that time came. It was the summer of 2019, I believe. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure it was the summer of 2019. The trademarks became available.
Yeah, I feel like 2019. Yeah. Maybe 2020.
So, like I said, I wanted to get my hands on any of them I could, but I was prepared to go for them all. So it was an online auction. I logged in that day. I think it was on a weird website. So you had to create like a username and stuff. And I think you had to already prepay, like have your credit card ready or something like that. So it was that time. The first bid came in, boom. Second bid came in, boom. I think I put in the third bid. Well, it started off at like, I think 1,000 or 5,000. I can't really remember. But finally, when we get to around 10,000, then it was easy to see that it was just me and somebody else. And obviously that somebody else was Gilbert Cooper himself, right? So for the next, I would say 20 minutes, like it was just Cooper and I going back and forth. And at this time, I didn't know it was Cooper, but I had a pretty good suspicion because I knew Tim Scott with Bluegrass Cutlery, and I knew Gilbert Cooper and Tim, you know, had this connection. I think they were friends or something like that. So we're getting up to, we're getting up to like 45,000, 47,000 for these 8 trademarks, right? So I called Tim Scott, and a lady down there answered, and I'm like, hey, this is who I am. I am Austin. I am the grandson of Clarence Reisner. Clarence Reisner and Tim Scott, you know, they were good friends. Can you please get me on the phone with Tim Scott? She's like, well, he's kind of busy right now. I was like, ma'am, just tell him I'm the grandson of Clarence Reisner, and I need to talk to him right now. So she runs down, I guess grabs him. And I knew Tim, obviously, from knife shows from 2014, 15, et cetera. So Tim's like, you know, hey, what's up, Austin? How you doing? I told him, hey, look, this is what I got going on right now. This is the dollar amount that we're at right now. And I'm pretty sure it's just me and this other guy. And I'm pretty sure his name is Gilbert Cooper. Do you know who he is? He's like, oh, yeah, I know Gilb. And I'm like, is there any way that you can get me on the phone with him right now? And he's like, yeah, give me a second. Let me look his phone number up. He gets on like a minute later. He's like, you know what? Give me your phone number. I'll give him a call. I'm like, sure. Give him my phone number. He hangs up. And the next thing you know, I got Gilbert Cooper calling me. And so to wrap up the story, we're probably I won't say what dollar amount we're at right now, but you can kind of like put it together because I don't want to let people know what the finished dollar amount was. But this continues on for another 10 to 15, 20 minutes. And him and I are just, we're talking on the phone. We're still putting in our bids, you know, because you have to bid like every, I think, 5 minutes.
Why are you guys
exactly? And so we're talking as we're bidding for these trademarks. And, you know, I'm telling him who I am. I don't think he ever met my grandpa.
Talking about the weather.
That's right.
While he's clicking bid.
So.
What do you get for mileage?
Right.
Yeah.
And I say, look, this is what I want to do with the trademarks. These are what the trademarks mean to me. Because from 2000, and even the, I think she was the vice president at Chatham Morgan near the end there. From maybe even 95, 2000 to 2010, 11, 12, right before that family took it over, Grandpa carried Chatham Morgan and Queen Cutlery on his back. They would always call Grandpa saying, hey, the knives aren't ready, but we really need that check. Is there, are you able to send that check? And of course, Grandpa would send that check.
Oh, is that right?
But, you know, they would always follow up. They would always send him his knives, and obviously Grandpa would always sell them. But to get back to my story, I told him, like, you know, this is what Chatham Morgan means to me. This is what I would do with the File and Wire trademark. This is what I would do with the Q, the Queen City, the Queen Cutlery trademark. Well, obviously he described, hey, look, I'm just going to be honest with you. This is how much I put towards the old equipment. This is how much it's going to cost, or it has costed me. And I think at that time he still had a few semi-loads to go back and forth, because I think he had a year or 2 years to get all that equipment out of that building. But don't quote me on that part. And he's like, this is how much I invested in the new knife business already. I need these trademarks. And so once he started talking to me, we kind of did a like a verbal handshake, and he agreed to, you know, sell me the first prototypes or samples of Chatham Morgan knives, which he did follow up on. I actually have them here in the basement with me. But moving forward, you know, I told him I can be a really good asset for you as far as pushing these new knives. I understand Queen. I understand Chatham Morgan's. And I'm telling you right now, if you have any questions whatsoever, please give me a holler, and I would be more than happy to share my knowledge of what Grandpa either had done with Queen or what he had passed down to me that, you know, I'm aware of. And so we came to this agreement where, you know, like I said, he would send me like the first prototypes of the Chatham Morgan knives and whatever. And we just got to such a high amount that I was like, you know what? It would take me 5 to probably 10 years to even make my money back. And that's if GC would make these knives for me, because that's all I want, is to bring those trademarks back to Titusville, or I'm sorry, to keep them in Titusville. But so I ended my deal. We kind of verbally handshook on that. And then obviously I did not bid, which allowed him to obtain the trademarks. So that's a story I've only told a few people, but it's not a secret. It's not a big deal. You know, that time has gone and gone. So yeah.
And then in the end, he's thinking, boy, I wish we could have made this deal about an hour earlier.
So that was the joke. When he finally had everything set up down there in Winchester, he invited me down, and it was a really good, I don't want to say meeting, because we both love pocket knives, but it was just a really good introduction to each other.
It was a good visit.
That's right. Good visit. Absolutely. And I joked with him, or we started talking about the trademarks, and I joked with him about the dollar amount. And, they were talking about how much they had invested. And then I was like, well, don't forget about the, and I said the certain amount, you know, for the trademarks. And they were like, yeah. We won't forget about that. But it was just a good joke. You know, he didn't have any ill intentions whatsoever. At least I don't think so, but no, they're good people down there. I talk to his son, through text all the time. So.
How many employees work at Cooper?
Yeah. So it's Gilbert Cooper, his son, Matt, his other son, and then another, gentleman. I don't know his name. So I think there's only four, and maybe they have help here and there. But obviously they can't, you know, push out a bunch of knives. So,
yeah, and they found out how hard it is to make knives, even with all the equipment, huh?
But yeah, so 2019, I had talked with Bill during that rendezvous, and I said, "Hey, do you plan on bidding for these you know Chet Morgan trademarks?" And he's like, "No, I just got too much going on with my own brand." He's like, "Honestly, I don't even care." I was like, you completely understand. Like, he has his own brand that he's built.
Yeah, and he's got multiple trademarks himself.
Exactly. Right. So fast forward to 21, I think it was actually 2022. So, well, not last year, but now 2 years ago, we were talking and he had actually brought up the fact that he wished I'm bouncing around. So I offered to Bill, I was like, if I buy these trademarks, I will keep them with GEC. You don't have to pay me anything. I just want to keep these trademarks with Titusville, Pennsylvania. And of course he said, you know, no, I got too much going on, blah, 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 whatever. Which, you know, I completely understand. Fast forward to 2021, maybe 22, we were at the rendezvous and he was like, you know what? I highly regret not going in with you on the trademarks. And I wish I would have kept them here in Titusville. And since then, Bill had actually talked to Gilbert, because I think Gilbert had a few questions about making pocket knives, and Bill's been open 100% with Gilbert, to my understanding, of helping him with any kind of questions he has regarding making pocket knives and the process and all that. So it's just,
of course he is. Bill Howard's a legend. Yep. He's a legend.
He sure is. Yes.
That's great. Mm. That's great. Yeah. I bet he wishes he did keep those. There's a lot of history, even with Bill himself there with those trademarks in that town. And gosh,
I was gonna say, Austin, you don't sell Case or Boker, do you?
No, Grandpa used to sell a little bit of Boker knives. That's just something Case's quality has gone downhill. You see it everywhere on YouTube, Instagram, social media. I don't even want to mess with Case. And I tried to sell Boker here 3 or 4 years ago. The passion wasn't there. Good knives. The passion wasn't there. And I'm very happy with where I'm at now. And
Neil had asked you what taught model wise, and I think maybe we got off on a tangent, but I mean, everybody listening to this knows Great Eastern Cutlery, crying out loud. It's frustrating for me it's frustrating for everybody with Great Eastern Cutlery. All you want to do is to see them succeed and make more knives. And my understanding from Bill is that the limitation is labor pool in Titusville, which if I ran Great Eastern Cutlery, sorry, Titusville, that'd be the first thing I'd do is move out of that town. But anyway, good for Bill for sticking around though. Again, legend status.
Absolutely. You see all these people complain about GC, but these people, they've never been to a GC rendezvous. They've never set foot inside that factory. They've never shook hands with the multiple employees inside that factory. And like you said, it's in Titusville, PA. You know, they don't have a group like Cincinnati, Ohio to choose from. They just have people that have lived in Titusville their whole life. So they just don't have that number of people to bring in, to train, to keep, and to keep growing GEC. It's just not there, unfortunately. So I always tell people, until you've visited GEC, been at the rendezvous, have an understanding of just how much time and effort, not just Bill, but all of their employees put into their knives. I mean, you can't be talking bad about them, because what they're doing right now is incredible. And if you can obtain a GC knife in 2023, 2024, I mean, that's a knife that is worth the world, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody in that town has either worked at GC or knows somebody that has.
Yes.
It is the last knife company town.
You know, absolutely.
It is the last one, Titusville, Pennsylvania. Yep. Another hot brand you have, we talked about just a snitch there, is Jack Wolf. And that's, what's his name? It's Ben Belkin, right?
Yep.
And he's here in Arizona. He's my next door neighbor, I guess.
He sure is.
Yep. You know, when those came on the scene, when was that? Was that 2020?
That was.
And for those that don't know, Ben is a huge GC fan. I wish that guy would start posting some of his picks up again of his GEC knives. Hope he didn't sell those things to fund this thing. But
I think that's how he made, you know, his first connection with social media was he just started posting his own GEC collection. And, you know, it was all beautifully displayed on his back porch with like a pool in the background or on a chair or on a table. I mean, I would log on every day and I would see that GEC and just like love everything about that knife.
Yeah, he's got a real good eye for knives and lines.
He sure does.
Which you can see a lot of GEC in his line. Of course, GEC's knives aren't GEC knives. So they're the best of the old stuff. Mm-hmm. I feel like Ben has done a good job of picking through some of those classic designs, like the gun stock. I mean, that's just a beautiful gun stock, just a lot of those knives. And I'm not super interested in the modern stuff now that they're doing, but I'd have to say that I was a little skeptical at first with knives with screws in them and deep grind marks.
Mm-hmm.
But you were so right when you mentioned that it's introduced a whole world of people to traditional pocket knives that never would have handled one.
Absolutely.
Without what they're doing with that brand. So, I'm really excited to see that. And I've taken inspiration from it. Obviously I'm starting to use some, you know, some fat carbon and that type of material too. Cause it is a good material, and I'm excited to see what else they do. And hopefully they keep pushing the traditional pocket knives forward even more.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Ben alone is a really good person. His buddy, Donnie, who works for him, is another awesome person. And together, I think they will take the brand of Jack Wolf knives. They're just going to keep growing it, and it's going to be exciting to see where they take it.
Yeah. They need to buy a shop there in Scottsdale and start making them themselves.
That's right.
I hope somebody says challenge accepted. Well, that'd be really neat. That'd be a cool, you know, Jack Wolf American made. That would be very cool.
It is
very expensive, but very cool.
Yes, it is. I mean, both myself, obviously Ben Belkin with Jack Wolf Knives, the guys over at Devo Knives, you know, we've all have looked into USA made OEM factories and getting these knives made here in the United States. And one, companies won't even give you the time of day. Or two, they're going to ask just an absolute ridiculous amount for that knife. And then you're going to have to, you know, add on to that knife in order to sell it to the dealers. And then the dealers sell it to the consumers. Or they're just not going to make the quality that these guys are going to ultimately want, unfortunately.
Yeah. I know people are listening to this saying poo-hoo, but I've seen it in person. I have seen individuals talk to manufacturers about producing knives in the United States and totally get blown off.
Absolutely. Yep.
By knife manufacturers. I have seen it myself, and it's insane.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of factors that go into making knives these days, I guess.
Yep.
Not just the know-how anymore, but all right. So that's a hot brand. So you said that, and Rosecraft, which is another brand that's made. And is Rosecraft overseas as well?
Yes. Rosecraft is overseas, made in China. Now, the thing about Rosecraft is it's a quality knife. Yes, it's made over in China, but it's a quality knife, and two, the price is really good. So those people that can't or don't want to get their hands on a GEC or Jack Wolf yet, they have that opportunity with Rosecraft blades. And I'm telling you right now, you buy one Rosecraft, you're going to want a second one, you're going to want a third one, and then you're going to be like, you know what? Maybe I do want that Jack Wolf. Maybe I do want that GEC. And that is where we are in 2024. And I think that's why the whole community is kind of pulling for modern traditionals, for GEC to keep making their quality knives, and for Rosecraft to continue making their unique designs. And it's going to be an interesting year to see where modern traditionals take us.
So in a way, China is saving the traditional pocket knife.
Pretty much. You know, I would, that way.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the designs of American folks that understand traditional slip joints. And because these USA companies won't OEM the knives, you only leave Chinese made OEMs or Chinese OEMs, or you can go over to Italy and have them OEM'd out over there for probably a lot more than what, well, I know a lot more than what these Chinese OEMs will do.
Right. And the quality out of China is insane, right?
Now. It's, you know, if you're not going to
get that out of Italy, no offense, Italians, but it's not happening in the current factories there.
If it was 2005, and I told Grandpa, hey, in 2021, 22, 23, I'm going to design my own knives and have them OEM'd in China, he probably would have punched me right in the face.
Yeah, he would have disowned you.
No, but I mean, Grandpa would have been like, he would have just shook his head, you know? But if I could talk to Grandpa right now and show him my design of the Ohio River Jack, which is my own OEM modern traditional, or the Lake Champlain Barlow I just created, or my third and fourth and fifth OEM that's down the line, if I could just allow him to hold this knife, I think he would be super proud that I'm designing my own knives. I'm still representing his brand, but he can see the quality that are in these knives, all the way down from fit and finish, blade edge, blade stock. I mean, it's incredible the quality that these modern machines can make out of or into these modern slip joints.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, we're not going to get into the politics of things. And obviously, the Chinese didn't figure this stuff out. A bunch of Americans went over there and did it for them and showed them how to do it, gave them all that tacit knowledge. But the fact is, in January 31st of 2024, the Chinese are making amazing knives.
They sure are.
Traditional knives.
Yeah, traditional. Modern traditional.
Do you know about the average age of your customers? Do you have a range? Rough range.
So on Instagram and Facebook, it does pull all the stats together. And I think it's like 40%, which is my highest percentage, is 30 to 40 year olds, which I'm 31 right now. So I would say anywhere from 20 to honestly, probably 85 or 90 years old is my range of age with my consumers, with the bulk probably being around 40, 45 years of age.
I guess that your average customer was probably in the 30s and 40s. And as an older collector, that makes me so happy because it shows that there's this newfound love, newfound enthusiasm for traditional pocket knives. And I hope maybe a few of these guys will branch out and collect some of the antique stuff like I do. But I'm just thrilled that there's a new base out there. And I'm
really in 2018, I wouldn't say a rumor was going around, but you know, GCs would sit on the shelf for 2 to 3 weeks, and traditional knives would just sit around for 1, 2, 3 months. And you would log on to social media and see people commenting, oh, nobody likes traditional slip joints. What is a slip joint? That's a grandpa's knife. Nobody wants that stuff. Fast forward to 2022, 2023, and forward and so forth. I mean, traditional slip joints, modern slip joints are making their way back with the younger crowd. And these modern slip joints are also making their way to these older gentlemen who swore up and down they would never purchase a Chinese made knife. And they're finding a deep appreciation for the quality that is coming out of China.
It's a fun time to be alive.
It sure is.
It's always fun to be alive, usually. Well, Austin, we're well past an hour now, and I think it's probably time to wrap it up. But I would have regrets if I didn't ask you for just one juicy, good Bill Howard story. What can you give us? What can you give the listener? Don't do it for me. Do it for the listener.
I will say this. Brian, he's my employee here at C. Reisner Cutlery. Brian and I have known each other since fourth grade. I love him like a brother. So he went with me to the rendezvous in 2019. So after the rendezvous, around evening time or dinner time, everybody goes to Cross Creek Resort. It's just a golf resort there in Titusville.
Yeah.
And that's where you can get dinner. It's like a bar kind of style of walk up and grab your own food. Well, Brian and I, we sit down. I think we're kind of early, but we go ahead and eat. And then they have like a wraparound deck where you can, you know, grab a drink and walk around back and just watch the sunset, watch golfers come in on the 18th hole and all that. Well, I got tied up talking with people, you know, at dinner, and Brian went and got a drink and went around back to the deck there. And you have so many people here to celebrate GC and just to celebrate being around each other and the appreciation of the hobby and everything. And I walked out and I noticed somebody was talking with Brian, and Brian's all by himself. You know, these two gentlemen are all by themselves over there in the corner of the deck. And the other gentleman is Bill Howard. And Brian told me a little bit about, you know, their conversation. And it, for some reason, it always has amazed me that, I mean, Bill just walked up to this random guy, Brian, who was just sitting there watching, you know, golfers come in, and just struck up a conversation with him, you know, ultimately finding out that, you know, Brian is a good friend of me. He works for the business and all that. And they started talking about Grandpa. And for some reason, it just took me back that that's how good of a person Bill is. Bill can just walk up to anybody and just have a conversation, and that conversation can lead into pocket knives, and who knows where, you know, that could form a really good friendship, or I don't know. For some reason, it's just always taken me back. You know, he could have been talking to anybody, but for some reason, you know, he saw Brian out there by himself, just, you know, enjoying the sunset, and struck up a conversation with Brian. And it just tells you what good character Bill Howard is.
On his busiest weekend of the year.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. That's cool.
So not juicy story, but
that's a good
sentimental story, I guess. I don't know.
Well, Bill Howard for president. I know he's got ideas on, on the country for sure. So that's great. Well, Austin, we want to thank you for coming on and hanging out and talking a little bit. That was a lot of fun, and we wish you great success this year. I'm sure you'll have it, and excited to see what else you do with your knives. I know you've got your own line of knives out there as well that you sell.
I do.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And, anybody can check him out, traditionalpocketknives.com on the old interwebs, and that's your social media and all that good stuff too, right?
Yeah, real quick, thank you guys for everything you guys do with the podcast. We all love tuning in to the podcast and just listening to you guys go back and forth, and the different people that you guys interview, or not interview, but, you know, talk with and associate with. From all of us, thank you to you guys who, you know, put on this podcast show.
Well, thanks again, Austin. And we want to thank the listeners for listening in. This was a fun episode, and we'll catch you on the next episode.